The income distribution for dentists is just so incredibly large. Some dentists are making less than $100,000 a year. Some are making more than $1 million a year. Why do some dentists make $120,000 a year while others are making $800,000 plus? So through my business, Practice Ownership Advisors, a big part of what I do is I evaluate dental practices. As a result, I've looked at hundreds of dental practices, over 500 just in the last year. And I'm looking at how much the dentist at these offices are making. So I've seen all over the United States this incredible distribution of some dentists making a lot of money and some dentists making very, very small numbers. And I've seen some correlations between the dentists who are making a lot and the dentists who are making a little bit. Another part of my service, what I do, is I have an ownership readiness review, in which case I'm speaking with dentists who are not yet owners, who are working at associate jobs. And part of that review is I'm asking them about their income. I'm asking them about their pay structure at their associate jobs. And I keep seeing this trend. The income for the lower quartile is going down. And the income for this upper quartile keeps going up. This distribution keeps getting wider and wider. Some dentists are making more and more and more every year, and some dentists just continue to make less and less. So how can you make sure that you are in the quadrant that is making more and more each year, rather than this one that is making less and less? If you remember back to statistics class, you have your normal distribution, and that's the bell curve, where you have your mean and your median. And the mean and the median in the bell curve are the same number. Half of people are going to be above the line and half are going to be below the line. That's your normal distribution. I think mistakenly, a lot of people, when they're thinking about income, think that income follows a normal distribution, follows this bell curve, but it absolutely does not, especially with dentistry. With dentistry, you have what's called a right skewed or positive distribution. You have a lot of people who make a little bit of money. We're talking the dentists who are making $120,000, $150,000 to $200,000 a year. But then you have a few people who are making a lot more than that. And so you get into a situation where the median, the middle number, might be somewhere around here. It might be maybe $180,000 per year. And then you get your average, and that might be a little further along, maybe $300,000 a year. So you have this short area here at the beginning, where you have the dentists that are making between $100,000 and $200,000 a year. And yeah, there's a lot of dentists that are in that category, but you have this wider, longer field of dentists who are making $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $1 million plus over here on the right. And so the question is, if you're here, if you are right here, how do you move yourself from making $150,000 a year to making $900,000 per year? Because remember, everyone on here is a dentist. Everyone on here is seeing patients. They're doing crowns. They're doing basically the same work. But these dentists are making significantly more than these dentists. So there's really two factors that determine how much money you're going to be making as a dentist. And I have this little graph here that I want to show you that helps to understand that. So the first part is going to be collections. How much money is the office you're working at actually collecting? Number one is going to be number of patients. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but the more patients you see, the more money that your office is going to be bringing in. Number two is going to be your treatment planning. If a patient comes in and they have a tooth that's hurting, and you take an x-ray of that tooth and diagnose what you need to have done on that one single tooth, you might make $1,000 from doing a crown. But if you do a comprehensive treatment plan where you're treatment planning everything in the mouth, in addition to that tooth that's hurting, you might find $10,000 or $20,000 of work on the same patient. And then number three is case acceptance. Just because you treatment plan $20,000 of dentistry on a patient doesn't mean that that patient is actually going to follow through with that treatment. So if you want to increase collections, you need to either increase the number of patients you're going to see, your treatment planning, or your case acceptance. Treatment planning and case acceptance, that's totally dependent upon you as the dentist. It's your skill at treatment planning and your ability to convince those patients to move forward. Now, number of patients, that's going to change based upon the office that you're at, because some offices are busier than others. Now, on this other axis, we have value capture or leverage. If you're going to produce a certain amount of dentistry, or your office is going to produce a certain amount of dentistry, what percentage of that do you personally get to keep? If you're at an associate job where you're keeping 30% of your production, that number is only 30% of your personal production. There's also hygienists. There might be other doctors at that office, and you're not getting a cut at all of the work that they're doing. So total office collections, you might only be keeping maybe 15%. If you can find a way to increase your value capture or your leverage at this business where you're keeping a higher percentage of that income, doing the same amount of dentistry, the same collections, the same treatment planning, same case acceptance, you can make significantly more money doing the same work just because you have increased your leverage. So the question is, as a dentist, how do you increase your value capture? How do you increase your leverage? Well, the obvious one is going from being an associate where you're sharing your income with someone else to being an owner where you get to keep 100% of the profits. Just by going from being an associate to being an owner, you're generally going to be doubling the amount of value that you're collecting per patient. There's a big misunderstanding that I commonly hear. Dentists say, well, I'm already making 30% of my collections, and the average overhead for a dental practice is 60%, so that's a 40% profit margin. Therefore, becoming an owner, I'm only going to be making about 10% more, so it's really not worth my time. As an owner, even if you have a 60% overhead, you're still making 40%, but of everything in the office, that includes the hygienists, that includes any other doctors you have working there. On average, the numbers that I actually see, dentists who are owners are generally making about twice as much per patient. Their value capture or their leverage is about twice what it is when they're working at their associate job. I mean, if you think about it, if you're working for Aspen, if you're working for Heartland, they have these big fancy corporate offices filled with all sorts of employees. Those employees aren't seeing patients. They're not making any money. The only way Aspen is able to have this giant headquarters filled with executives is because dentists are willing to go and share half of their income with this corporation. Remember, fees are generally set by the insurance companies. You're not going to be collecting more on a patient at Aspen than you are at a private office. The difference is that you're just going to be sharing a lot more of your income with the corporation rather than keeping it for yourself. And sometimes it's even worse if you're at a private associate job. So I'm going to draw a line here. We're going to have the top left and the bottom right. Here we have low income, and here we have high income. And so as a dentist, your goal is to figure out how can you get from low income to high income? And the answer is going to be either increase your collections or increase your leverage. So I've got a list here of some of the most common types of jobs that dentists have. So the first, and this is the most dangerous type of job you can have, is a slow associate job. So your leverage is low and you're not seeing that many patients. That's going to put you over here. Working at a slow associate job just really, really doesn't make sense because not only are your collections low, but you're sharing a portion of your already low collections with someone else. These are jobs that are typically run by dentists who have first graduated from school. They don't yet know what they're getting into. They don't yet understand the system. And they take this associate job at a private practice because they've heard, oh, private practice is great. I shouldn't work for a DSO. I should go into private practice. The problem is oftentimes that means you're going into an office where there's already another doctor working there. You're going to come in and you're going to be the second doctor at the office, or maybe the third or fourth if you're in a really bad situation. And the other dentist is already seeing all the patients and they already have a full schedule. You come in and there's no patients for you. You might just be seeing new patients and your schedule might be slow. I've heard of some associates, they go into the office and they just sit around all day while the other dentist, the owner of the practice, has been working all day. I've even heard of scenarios in which the owner dentist will duck out and leave at 2 or 2:30 and leave the associate there till 5. Yet the owner produced $20,000 that day, and the associate only got a few thousand dollars in production because the owner was seeing all of the patients. Be very careful about a slow associate job. If you're at a slow associate job right now, there's nothing but opportunity if you switch jobs. Either go to an office where you're going to be busier or find a way to get into ownership where you can increase your value capture. It does not make sense to work somewhere where your collections are low and you're keeping a low percentage of those collections. All right, the next type of job is a job where you're going to be busy, but you're working as an associate. And generally, these are going to be jobs, corporate type DSO jobs, like working at an Aspen or a Heartland Dental. Now, the advantage here is because the offices are so busy and you're going to be seeing a lot of patients, your collections are going to be high, which is great, especially your first year out of school, your first few years out of school, while you're getting used to things, you're getting your speed up. Working at a corporate job like Aspen can actually be really good because you're getting all sorts of experience. You're working fast, you're learning new techniques. Great. But keep in mind your value capture at a place like Aspen or Heartland is going to be so incredibly low because these expensive corporations are going to keep such a high percentage of your collections. So much wasted money. I often talk to dentists. Yeah, maybe they're making $300,000 a year, which at the time to them sounded great, but they're working 5 or 6 days a week doing dentistry, clinical dentistry, 6 days a week. That is not sustainable. I am telling you, I have talked to dentists who are new in their career and who have been working for a long time. And the ones who've been working for a long time will be clear with you. You cannot work 5 or 6 days a week sustainably as a dentist. You're going to hurt your back. You're going to hurt your wrist. You're going to get depressed by being in an office all day and not having time to get out and do hobbies and do other things. For a short period of time, it might make sense to work at Aspen or Heartland or some corporate office where you're busy and making a decent amount of money for an associate job. But you're trading away your life to be there. You are working so incredibly hard and you're giving away so much of your money to other people. The next type of job is a Medicaid job. This is going to be a situation where you're really busy. You're busy because there's always going to be Medicaid patients. But Medicaid reimbursement rates are pretty low. And value capture-wise, you're still probably working for some sort of corporation to have this Medicaid job and you're sharing some of your money. So Medicaid jobs are okay. It's probably better than being at a slow associate job. But honestly, if I had the choice between a Medicaid job and a corporate job like Aspen or Heartland, I'm probably choosing the corporate job just because your collections are going to be higher. You're going to be seeing more higher paying patients at a corporation on average than you are at a Medicaid job. But I would choose the Medicaid job over a slow associate job where you're just sitting around all day. So far, all the jobs we have looked at have been along this low value capture plane. The next type of jobs we're going to look at are going to be ownership positions where you're able to keep a higher percentage of your production. Now, one of the questions I usually get from dentists who are wanting to become owners, they understand they need to increase their leverage. They say, should I do a startup or an acquisition? Startups are interesting because yes, you're going to increase your value capture, but for the first few years, you're likely not going to have that many patients. And so your collections are going to be low. Now, so would I take doing a startup over working at a slow associate job? Yeah, probably. I mean, you're still not going to be seeing that many patients at your startup, but at least you're going to be making more money per patient you're seeing. So I would put startup here. Higher value capture, but low collections. Now, let's say you get into ownership, but you buy a smaller practice. Once again, you've increased your value capture. You're making more money per patient than you would have been working at your associate job. But because it's a smaller practice, your collections are not going to be as high as they could be. Remember, your collections are determined by the number of patients, your treatment planning skills, and your case acceptance. So even if you have great treatment planning and great case acceptance, if you don't have enough patients, you're still going to have a hard time having a high collections number. Now, some dentists are totally fine with having a small practice. And if you are the type that values your time and your freedom, you only want to work 2.5 days per week. This is something that a lot of dentists aren't really thinking about, but you're going to be making about the same at a small solo practice as you would be making at a large corporate DSO job like Heartland Dental. Are you going to be making as much as you'd be making if you had a large group practice that you owned yourself? No, but not everyone wants that. Not everyone wants to be working that hard. No, not everyone wants that kind of responsibility. If you are the type, you're happy with making $300,000 a year, but you hate working 5 or 6 days a week, and you'd rather cut back to 2 to 3 days a week and still make very, very good money, then owning a small practice can actually be a really, really smart move. Part of the reason when you go to like government statistics websites and you're looking at what the average income for dentists is. Now, a big reason is tax incentives. Dentists are able to reduce their taxable income for tax purposes. And so those reported numbers are actually significantly lower than the actual income numbers for dentists, especially if you're an owner. But another part of the reason is at some point, a lot of dentists just, they're happy with making $200,000 to $300,000 a year. And they don't want to work anymore. And so they cut back their schedule. They start doing less dentistry. They just take things a little bit easier. And that's totally fine. If you want to have a smaller practice, more laid back, less stress, and still doing very, very well financially, owning a small practice can be a great option. Now, here's the way you can start making $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 a year. If you can find a practice where you're 100% owner, you've increased your value capture, and the office has a large number of patients, you've gotten good at treatment planning and case acceptance, you can have high collections and high value capture at the same time. This is how you make $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 per year as a dentist. High leverage and high collections at the same time. I personally know 5 different dentists that are within driving distance of my house that are making more than $1 million a year. A few of them are larger group practices, but a few of them are actually single doctor offices where they are making more than $1 million a year. How do they do that? They've increased their value capture and they have gotten to a point where they have a high number of patients and they're really good at treatment planning and case acceptance. It's really that simple. If you can increase your collections and increase your leverage in the business, you can do very, very well as a dentist. Now, there's one more type that we at least should discuss in this video, and that's people who have dramatically increased their value capture and dramatically increased their collections. I mean, they might be down here somewhere, you know, way down here doing very, very well. These are the dentists that are sometimes making $3, $4, $5 million per year. Now, most dentists are not going to get to that point. These are the dentists that are like up here, you know, maybe 5% of dentists make it to this point, but it's possible. And the way you do it is if you can get into a very, very large practice that has a very, very high number of patients, and you put systems in place which enable great treatment planning and great case acceptance, even if the treatment planning is being done by an associate dentist, you can make a lot of money. These are the type of practices where you might have 3 to 4 associates working at the office. Maybe you also have some specialists that are there either part-time or sometimes even full-time. This might be an office that has multiple chairs, maybe 20, 30 chairs, a huge number of patients, and your value capture as the owner, your leverage is incredibly high because not only are you going to be keeping the majority of any dentistry you personally do, you're going to get a cut of anything the hygienists are doing, anything the associate dentists are doing, and anything those specialist doctors are doing. You might be making 50 to 100K from each hygienist. You might be making 300 to 400K from each associate doctor. And then you might do some work yourself and might be making an additional 300 to 400K. And so if you have 4 associates, 7 hygienists, and you yourself are still doing some work, maybe you've graduated to doing mostly implants and cosmetic stuff, whatever, then you could potentially have, you know, even higher collections because you're doing higher leverage procedures. This is why there is no limit to how much money you can make as a dentist. $5 million a year, possible. Difficult? Yeah. I mean, it's going to be hard to get to that point. Long-term, I think this is a great long-term option if that's for you. But right now, I don't care how long you've been out of school, you know, where you're working, what your associate job is, whatever, how much you're making today, you can get to the point where you either own a small solo practice or own a large solo practice, and you can be there in a few months. I've helped dentists go from their slow associate jobs where they're making $150,000 to ownership of a large practice where they're making $700,000 to $800,000 in just a few months. When I say it out loud like this, it sounds a little crazy. It sounds kind of like some sort of hoax, some sort of scam, like, oh, I'm going to help you triple, quadruple your income. I understand it sounds ridiculous, but I have seen this happen so many times with so many different dentists. If you are willing to step out of your associate job and start looking at ownership opportunities, if you buy the right practice, you can do very, very, very well as a dentist. Now, you need to be careful. You can't just buy any practice that's on the market because you could buy a practice anywhere along here. You could buy a very small practice that's not doing very well. And sure, your value capture might be high, but if your collections are only a few hundred thousand and you're keeping 40% of that, your income still might be lower than it was at an associate job. So the key to keep in mind is not that ownership is always better. Because if you buy the wrong practice, you might be way down here making potentially less than you did at your associate job. And ownership does have some disadvantages. For instance, if you want to get out of ownership, if you want to leave the practice that you're at, when you're an associate, it's a job. You just quit. You leave. You can go whenever you want. When you own a practice, there's some commitment involved, and it can be difficult to leave that practice, especially if you just took out a loan from a bank. You're going to have to pay back that loan. Even if you walk away from the practice, you're still going to be stuck paying back that loan. And if you buy the wrong practice, you can get into some trouble. One of the big risks that I see with dentists buying practices is if you buy a practice where the seller was profitable, that doesn't necessarily mean that you as the buyer are going to be profitable. Because Potentially, the dentist that you're buying from is very, very comprehensive with their treatment planning and very good at case acceptance for various reasons. If you come in, there might still be a lot of patients there or not. But if you can't replicate this treatment planning or case acceptance, you might struggle to keep up with where that seller was at. Sometimes the treatment planning piece is as simple as you just need to learn how to do some specialty procedures. But some practices I see quite often, the seller is treatment planning things that are borderline unethical. You know, doing crowns on teeth that should have been fillings, recommending to have crowns replaced because there's a little bit of dark staining around the margins of the crown. And they convince the patient that that's decay, when in reality, it was just some staining and that crown was probably just fine. Sometimes I see sellers that are adding extra codes that are not supposed to be added, that are not part of what the agreement with the insurance company is, you know, additional lab fees on crowns and things that you as a buyer are ethically probably not going to want to do. And so if you show this practice to an accountant or a bank, they might say, wow, this is a profitable practice. The dentist did really well last year. But when you as a buyer come in, if you're not able to replicate what that seller was doing, but you also have a practice loan to pay back and you have all the same expenses the seller had, sometimes this collections number can go way down. Ideally, you want to find a practice that's a growth opportunity where you can come in and potentially double collections from what the seller was doing in the previous year. What this means in practice is when you're looking at the market, looking at practices, you might be looking at practices that fall squarely into this ownership solo practice bucket, a practice that doesn't look that profitable. When you first look at it, the collections might not be that high. The profit might not be that high. You say, hey, this isn't that great. I mean, it's an okay practice. But what you might be missing is there might be a huge number of patients at this small practice, but the seller has been slowing down. That is the key. If you can find a practice that has a high number of active patients, but the seller is slowing down and not treatment planning very comprehensively, you come in and you can grow this practice sometimes immediately just by improving the treatment planning and case acceptance piece. You can grow this practice very quickly and you can go from the small solo practice up to the large solo practice very, very quickly. Sometimes to the point where you can even start to hire associates right away because there are so many patients. And just by implementing better treatment planning and better case acceptance, you are dramatically raising collections and dramatically raising your income. So if you are interested in working together, practice ownership advisors, that's how I help dentists find the right dental practice to buy. Don't just buy any practice. If you buy the wrong practice, you might as well just stay as an associate. But if you can buy the right practice, well, then you can be well on your way to doing very, very well as a dentist.